So that's what it is. Anyway, tonight we've got last weekend we saw the post conference. I haven't seen it. Between McGregor and Mayweather. Hope Mayweather gets his fucking ass kicked. Why didn't Mayweather go in the octagon? Why does McGregor have to go into the ring? Makes no sense, so he can fly away again. Like a chicken, bark, bark, bark. Use its legs, bark, bark, bark. Run away in circles like he always does. I do not like Mayweather. I think he's a fucking fraud. I think Mike Tyson needs to step in and chew that motherfucker up, man. And Mike Tyson, though, in the UFC, I think he would be good. If you like wrestling, because a lot of people in Tyson's fights grabbed Mike Tyson because he was on you 24/7 and he would move his head so much, his head movement, and as he's moving his head, he'd throw a jab at the same time, a vicious jab at the same time. He was on to you all the time. You see the difference if you watch Tyson from the 80s, where he was really fast and he really just fucking threw hard lefts and rights really fast at moving his head, to the Tyson that came back and fought Frank Bruno. He weren't moving his head as fast as he was, even though he managed to win a couple of fights before losing to Holyfield. Mike Tyson in the UFC, obviously, I think all he'd have to do is learn some basic wrestling and kicks, and I think he'd do very well. The only person I see causing Mike Tyson any trouble in Mike Tyson's heyday would be John Jones. Nate Diaz, probably a bit too small, maybe though, because of his reach. But nobody, and I mean, I don't care what anyone says, Bruce Lee would fucking kill any motherfucking MMA boxer and any Mike Tyson if he got into the ring. Bruce Lee were too fast. Mike Tyson come at Bruce Lee, even if he managed to even throw a punch, Bruce Lee would kick him with his reach. He would step in, kick him in the head, and then he would use his Jeet Kune Do to move in and give him that 1-inch punch, lights out, less than 5 seconds. He's too fast, Bruce Lee. I've seen his fights. Bruce Lee was a fighter. I'm telling you that for now. Bruce Lee was fucking unhuman when it came to shit like that. It doesn't matter about your size. As you see with Mike Tyson, as he beat up bigger guys. It doesn't matter about your size. Bruce Lee would probably, even before Tyson threw a punch, would throw a kick to the face and that's it. He'd go flying. Down he'd go. No one could touch Bruce Lee. Be interesting, Mike Tyson versus Lesnar. Now that would be interesting. Because Tyson would have to knock Lesnar. Tyson from the 80s I'm talking about. Tyson would have to knock Lesnar out and move, basically. Or just keep on moving to get away from Lesnar. Get into Lesnar, hit him with a few jabs. Maybe hopefully knock him out in the first few jabs. If he don't, then just move his head and keep moving along. As soon as Lesnar gets close, and he's not slow, Brock Lesnar, so Brock Lesnar could get a punch in. As soon as Lesnar would get hold of Tyson, Tyson would be down, and Lesnar would probably end up demolishing him. But that would be interesting. Lesnar would probably be one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time if he dedicated himself to that rather than go to WWE. But I think it's going to be, hopefully, Roman Reigns versus Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, because I made a t-shirt advertising that. So I hope Roman Reigns wins for my benefit, because I want to sell this t-shirt. Kirk. But I don't know, it could be a triple threat. You never know. Samoa Joe took it to Lesnar like no other. That's all I got to say about that. The second episode of A Doggy Dog World will be on the next podcast as we go back out and Buster will be there and everything will be there. Buster the Labrador, the Border Collie and Hershey will be in attendance. Although two other guest dogs will be there. Now, 79 on the list of Brooklyn criminals. That's what I'm doing in my podcast now. I thought you'd be interested because this is the real, these are the real deals and guys that you've probably never heard of from these articles. I put it onto my own, I read a bit of it, but I put it into my own words. So these are not actually copying off words. I'm putting most of it into my own words. Long before John Gotti, you know John Gotti, the Teflon Don, John Gotti, with his three-piece suits and everything, grabbed the headlines as being a godfather-like figure. Just like Al Capone was a celebrity in the mafia, John Gotti was following in Al Capone's footsteps. But before John Gotti, there was Benjamin Bugsy Siegel, the original national celebrity gangster. In the annals of outlaws from the Broken Land, perhaps none is mythologized as Siegel. After all, the self-made Jewish American mobster from Brooklyn is credited with founding the ultimate sin city. I thought that was Lefty who did that. The guy who played Robert De Niro. I know the guy who played Robert De Niro was called Tony. The guy, Joe Pesci, was Tony. The psychopath from Casino. His real life was Tony. I thought it was Lefty that owned all the casinos. Gambling Mecca Desert. A photographic as Siegel, though he was every bit the psychopath and such violent runaway train that his own partners put him down like Mad Dog. You mean Sam Mad Dog? The assassinated Siegel at home in Beverly Hills. Slingly slugs through the front window, the kill shot obliterating his eye socket, captured in an ironic crime scene photograph. Siegel's success convincing stingy mobsters to plow millions of ill-gotten pension funds ripped off the Teamsters to fund his dream of the Sunset Strip alone ranks him high on the list. But there's so many more layers to this man, no one called Bugsy, at least not to his face. In fact, he has done more of his dirt within the confines of King County. He most certainly would have ranked higher on this list. Long before Siegel was a top racketeer, gangster, casino developer, an all-round menace to society, he was a rough-and-tumble street urchin scrapping to survive on the mean streets of Brooklyn. As an everyday life, he would be targeted by other hoodlums. Born in desperate poverty in Williamsburg in 1906, the son of Russian Jewish immigrants, Siegel dropped out of school at a young age. He threw himself into the underworld with wingman Mo Sedway at his side, starting a scam at starting pushcart vendors. Either they paid up or Siegel and Sedway combined to torch their carts. I imagine they all paid. As he grew into a teenager, Siegel's rap sheet swelled with arrests for robbery, assault, attempted rape, even murder. Like many psychopaths, Siegel was charming and manipulative, masking a violent temper simmering below the surface. Siegel's brutality earned him a reputation for excessive violence that attracted Mayor Lansky, another rising Jewish gangster of the era, who became a close confidant for most of Siegel's life. Add to Siegel's resume an early stint in the hired gun for the Murder Inc. outfit of Brownsville, and you had the makings of one of the most notorious gangsters Brooklyn ever produced. Well, He's 98. He's 79 on the list, so he can't be one of the most. A prominent bootlegger during the Prohibition, Siegel hit his sights on expanding his gambling portfolio once the Volstead Act was reappealed in 1933. Siegel left New York in 1936, heading west, much to the relief of his many Brooklyn rivals. Storming to the West Coast, Siegel's reputation made him the much feared enforcer, leading him to Las Vegas. Then, little more than a rundown stopover on the way to California, when developer William Wilkerson ran out of funds to finish the Flamingo Hotel, Siegel swept into the breach, convincing his Italian and Jewish gangster partners back east to fund the expanded renovation. Expanded renovation. A pink Flamingo Hotel and Casino opened on December 26, 1946, though soon closed for additional renovations, infuriating Siegel's silent partners. That beachhead anchored the mob's wildly successful entrance into Las Vegas that threw off millions of illegal skims for decades to come. At the time, Siegel's extensive overruns, not to mention the rumors Bugsy was pocketing mob money, sealed his fate, as he would be steal from the lot machines that were rigged by other Italian mafia members. On June 20th, 1947, Siegel was shot to death through the window of his Beverly Hills mansion in Virginia Hill. Brooklyn's own Bugsy Siegel never did get to appreciate what he helped create, and that was the gangsters and the mobs taking over the casinos in Las Vegas. People like Lefty and Tony, who made it famous with the film Casino. Then again, never did his victims, so fuck him. Anthony Weiner, 78, aka Carlos Danger.
Yo, it's Carlos! I'm Carlos Danger! Carlos, but I'm Danger! Danger! Carlos Danger!
Ripped from the files of the Fantastic Flameouts, we find now infamous Brooklyn politician Anthony Weiner, once poised to make serious runs at the majority of New York City in 2011. Growing up in the Park Slope section of Brooklyn, Weiner was a proud product of New York City's public school system, attending Brooklyn Tech High School before going on to State University of New York at Plattsburgh, a congressional aide to Charles Schumer when Brooklyn's Democrat Dynamo was in United States House of Representatives. Weiner then served in New York City Council from 1992 to 1998 before winning Schumer's seat in New York's 9th Congressional District in 1999. Weiner made his first unsuccessful run at Gracie Mansion in 2005, bested by Fernando Ferrer in the Democratic primarily. Yet 2013 was supposed to be another story, which Weiner, a political darling of Brooklyn's leading yipping pack of Democratic hopefuls, and then something, shall we say, came up. That's when notorious Carlos Danger emerged from his secret lair. Just who was this Carlos Danger, this international man of mystery? Well, Carlos Danger was Anthony Weiner's self-inflicted social media handle that he used when sexting pictures of his Weiner to woman not named as Mr. Weiner. Sent pictures to a Weiner, his Weiner to Mrs. Weiner. That makes sense. It adds up. You can add up the puzzle there. In 2011, the scandal known as Wienergate. Wiener sending pictures of Wiener to a Mrs. Wiener burst all over tabloid media, starting when the US Home member sent a link of selfie of erect member in tight boxer shorts to a 21-year-old college student in Seattle. Bet she loved that. Intentionally denying he sent the link, Wiener backpedaled away from the lie that someone hacked his account. He admitted later to sending the link and other links to more women. You fucking online pervert. Perverse pervert. Both before and during his marriage to Huma Abedin and senior political advisor to Hillary Fuckface Clinton, the wilting Wiener resided from Congress, which I would if I was near Fuckface Clinton. Imagine the grib clee that consumed smug headline writers in newsrooms across America. Wieners rise and fall, wee my wiener, I will stick it out. Same old dick and same old dance. I post my dick on the internet, on the blogs in advance. Wait, it gets better and worse, depending on how you feel about the double entries of disgraced politicians. Even more hilarious, disastrous turn of events. He mounted another bid for New York City's mayor, only to have it prematurely deteriorate into the wake of yet another sexting scandal. Is that tech sex crime? Sexting scandal. Never heard of that one. It must be sexting is a crime now. Texting sexual photos or videos to people. The website, The Dirty, released the pictures sent by mysterious Carlos Danger to 22-year-old woman, supposedly 2012 and 2013, well after Wiener resigned from his seat in the US Congress for a previous scandal. With every new detail, the media whipped out clever headlines. Whether Wiener withdrew himself from the consideration from the mayoral race, it was Wiener pulls it out again. When he denied, he tweeted the photo, Wiener gets grilled. When news emerged that Huma Abedin was pregnant, little Wiener is in the oven. As he's no longer erect, it's in the oven, and little Wiener is shrinking as the police are coming to the truth that he is a sexting online Wiener post blogger, posting his Wiener across the internet. Like the advert Churchill. Oh, it's Churchill. Give you 50% off cars and insurance. And if you're not interested in that, I've got to ask you something. You want to see my knob? Well, you can also see my knob on the net. Just type in Winston Churchill. When the president chimed and suggesting Obama beats Wiener. Do you mean Obama sucks on Wiener? This is a bit conspiracy to me. When governor followed suit, it was Cuomo spanks Wiener. Yes, we see Wiener is exposed again. Wiener's pickled. What do you mean his Wiener stinked of pickled when Obama was sucking it? Dirty motherfucker. I could keep going. In fact, I probably fill this butt with more Wiener shrimps. The former world beater was relegated to the role of baby stroller Skepling, Mr. Mom taking the backseat to successful political career of his wife. Yet, every time the Wiener poked his head into public life, headline writers were standing at attention, pens poised, spurting out quips of clever enough one up one another on the next morning's front pages. Fascinated by his Wiener. Mr. Wiener fighting another round of sexting allegations, this time with an underage girl. Wiener finally went from a 4-inch erection to a 1-inch wiener. Don't know why they call him Carlos Dangerous. They're calling the perverse. The perverse of wieners of the Holocaust of Carlos. Sean Elias, the Holy Rollers, number 77, to succeed at international drug smuggling, yet must carefully select those concealing your narcotics to minimize detection. Take Sean Elias, a prolific Israel-Canadian smuggler who masterminded an ingenious method for manning his international ecstasy ring. He used acidic teenagers from Brooklyn as mules who carried thousands of little white pills in false bottom bags from Europe to New York's John F. Kennedy International Airport. The lucrative scheme netted millions of dollars in profit and became a subject of a Hollywood movie. Elias Lowe's rapidly rose in the drug state of the mid-90s. A demand for the club drug ecstasy exploded in America's subculture. Did in Manchester in the early late 80s in Manchester. It was fucking massive in Manchester, the ecstasy scene. The Hacienda. I remember my fucking uncle would go there and get fucking pilled up. It was a revolution. Like a wonder drug when it first come out. According to investigators, Erez recruited his pill jockeys from orthodox communities of Wilmsburg and Borough Park in Brooklyn and Monsey in upstate New York. The teens took 1,500 each to take to European round trip, with Erez misleading them to believe they smuggled diamonds, not drugs. You think ultra realistic, hadistic teens would be reluctant smugglers? Not so. Erez enticed them with an opportunity to visit Amsterdam and experience the types of entertainment rare in places like Borough Park and Monsey. That is, as long as the smuggling did not require travelling on Saturdays, the Sabbath of traditional day of religious observance in Jewish faith, prohibiting any form of labour. Running into the largest international ecstasy smuggling ring upon that point, Erez split his time between New York and Amsterdam, the originating point of shipments, before the drug ring ran its course. Erez and his band of black clad dope mules smuggled more than 1 million pills ecstasy into the United States, and they did it less than a year. In 1999, authorities rounded up Erez and many members of the ring, not exactly hardened criminals. 18 co-defendants pled guilty to assortment of crimes. To avoid harsher penalties, Erez took the plea in 2001, admitting his guilt to drug conspiracy charges in Brooklyn Federal Court. He was sentenced to 15 years in prison. Erez is transferred to a facility in Ottawa in 2005, where his sentence was reduced to 10 years as per Canadian sentencing limits. He was released 2 months later in summer of 2005. Then this tale took a life of its own. The story is too bizarre to resist a Hollywood born incredibly from Erez's case. The movie Holy Rollers debuted in a fucking hell start in 2010, starred popular actress Jesse Eisenberg and young Hasid, who get swept up in a smuggling scheme. The movie poster rang with its tagline. In 1998, 1 million ecstasy pills were smuggled into the USA by a group of Hasidic Jews Much of the shooting of the film took place in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. So we'll get to the last 76, 75 in the next podcast. So you like that? That's off the 50. If you've seen the 51st State movie, it's a total thing about that. Because the pill scene was fucking big over here at this time. And obviously Samuel Jackson, being from New York, wanted to connect. So what he did is he went down to the fucking Scouse in Liverpool, yeah, to get some fucking blue pills, yeah. So I remember at the time blue pills were the fucking shit. You take one of them and you're up for 36 hours straight. No sleep, just fucking buzzing for all that. So he come down and Francis fucking Bigby. Fucking big me. Who the fuck are you? I'm Scottish. Who the fuck are you? Is the guy who basically went into a pub, into a United pub, and threw a fucking Molotov United fans and then got chased out the fucking pub by him. The fucking cunt. Francis fucking Bigby supplied Samuel Jackson with the pills to take back to America. And Francis Bigby then showed him a match between United and Liverpool, which were fearsome rivals at the time. I love that film. So there's another film based on ecstasy smuggling through Europe, because a lot of Americans get it from this country. But now we go for the fucking news of the day. The turnbuckle. Master Ace in your face, taking over the place. Got 200 mil in the briefcase. As I get arrested, I hide my lace. In the door, so the head I can bang. I smuggle in the lace, so in jail. My neck I can hang. See, my raps are getting worse by the day. I haven't raps in a while. I'm giving up. I had a sick rap in my head the other night though. Real good rap in my head. The other night I wanted to do. I just got up in my head, it was like one of the best poets. Best rap I had, and thought, yeah, I should make a song out of this, but obviously I forgot, so I went to bed and then woke up and forgot about it. It's sad. Anyway, here comes the news, news flash on the SFS podcast. Australian bribed to be shot dead by US cop after calling 911. Australian bribe was shot to dead by a US cop after calling 911. That is very insane and crazy, and I've never heard something as fucked up as that. Maybe 991 restrict the fucking Aussies from calling them. I don't know. Elon Musk's chilling warning to humanity. Tesla and SpaceX CEO says all represents fundamental risk to humanity. As the Illuminati still ranges. Daniel Radcliffe, Harry Potter, comes to the rescue of a tourist mugged in Salford. Hey, you've got some balls, haven't you? Former boxing champ claims that Conor McGregor was KO'd in sparring. That's not good. Tyson was KO'd in sparring just before the Buster Douglas fight. So, could be an upset there. Another news story. Come on, bring them in. We have to. It's part of the podcast. Here we go. Russia is the largest country in the world, but can you name the smallest? Vatican City. R. Kelly is once accused of being a paedophile, holding a woman against their will in a paedophile ring called as a sex cult. As you know, R. Kelly molested Aaliyah when she was young, when she was 13 years old, so I'm not very surprised about that. Woman steals back stolen bike advertised on Facebook. Huh? Why would you advertise stealing a bike on Facebook, you dumb motherfucker? But the woman had a shock of her life when you got a bike back. Mischievous George gets peep talk from Prince William as he thinks he's a war hero but really is a fucking coward with a silver spoon up his arse, and it will be there so tight that he cannot pull it out in a million years, as well as his foregoing ancestors. Roger Federer's Wimbledon 2017 win. No Joe Moy win. But at least he did it. There's another Beckham baby on the way. Oh, fucking great news.
Who gives a shit?
Momentous men, night witches, and other secrets of the Second World War. Secrets include witchcraft, provided by the Germans, and torture and paedophilia used by their captured Jews have just come to surface on this world. And in entertainment, a must-see that might be posted on YouTube, Sylvester Stallone shares a rare pic of Rocky 1, a deleted scene where he's boxing Apollo Creed. Very, very interesting. Now, advertisement. Audible, I told you, $6.99 a month for any book you want. If you don't feel like reading and you want to listen to it, a good audiobook presenter, then just sign up and get a credit every month, and you can get the best books you want off that credit. That's what I do, and it saves me a lot of money because I buy books worth like £50. I just bought The Iceman, Richard Krakinski, and Chris Benoit's book, Nancy. Some good books on there, so that's pretty good. And UFC Fight Pass, $5.99, get every fight that's ever come up on UFC. The live fights you get within 2 days. So, if you want to watch the Jones Cormier fight live, you have to get BT Sport or watch it on the internet somewhere. Or you can wait 2 days and you'll get it on the app anyway, the UFC app. So that's my advertisement for today. Now I'm going to play on a game called Deadpool, my favourite superhero of time. And I will see you later. Now fuck off.